Welcome to the Wealth Setting Podcast. It's January 21st, 2015. This is episode 76. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealth Setting Podcast, my goal is to help you build not only your net worth, but more importantly, your personal freedom and independence. I like to say that money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. So in this podcast, we just don't talk about personal finance or only talk about investing in stocks. I try and cover a broad range of categories so that you can learn to not only manage your money, but more importantly, to manage your own life. If you're not familiar with my 10 wealth building principles, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. That's where I lay out my own personal philosophy. And it's not something I read in a book. It's not something I learned at college. These are principles that I put together and learned over nearly 30 years building my own personal financial independence. Some people may call these simple or just say they're common sense. Well, that could be, but look around you. We live in one of the most prosperous countries in the history of mankind, and nearly everybody's broke. So I would say that if this is common sense, not too many people are applying it in their own lives. I do want to apologize for the audio quality yesterday and today, and probably for a couple more episodes. I am operating away from my home office, and there's a likelihood that we'll be picking up some background noise, but I don't want that to distract from the content of the show, and so we'll do the best we can with what we have to work. Well, the markets look like they might be breaking out today, but as I mentioned before, I'm still holding tight. The market's been too volatile. It's up one day, down the other. Things are looking a little more encouraging, but I am going to continue to sit it out until I see more of a definitive trend that I can detect and then determine an entry point at that moment. And that's all I'm going to say about the stock market today. What I really want to talk about in today's episode is economics. And we're not going to talk about the stuffy economics, supply, demand, macro, micro, you know, Econ 101. I want to talk about the philosophy of economics and try and explain some key reasons to you why, if you're not familiar with economic principles, you should be, and how, if you apply them to your life, I think you'll find out that you not only manage your money better, but you manage your personal affairs better as well. You know, it's been said that the eyes are the window on the soul. Well, as much of a nerd as I am, if I were a poet, I would have written that economics is the window on the soul. And I really believe that. You see, economics at its heart, it's not just some social science, or it's not a bunch of charts and graphs, or a bunch of people arguing about what interest rates should be. Economics, at its bare roots, is all about the understanding of human nature. Forget about psychology and sociology and all that stuff. Hey, to me, it all comes down to economics. If you want to know realistically about how humans interact with each other, how they react, what they think, if you want to be able to predict their behavioral patterns, then what you should be studying is economics, because that's what's at the heart of economics. It's all about human nature. You've oftentimes heard me say in this podcast that the stock market has less to do with economic principles or accounting or finance or any of that kind of stuff. It's not about multiples and valuations and balance sheets. 80, 90, I don't know, maybe 99% of the movement of the stock market, in my opinion, it really all comes down to human nature. The stock market is a collective daily recording of the interactions of millions, if not billions, of people. If they're happy, if they're motivated, if they're engaging in commerce and business, if they have a very low fear factor, if they're enthusiastic, then the market goes up. When they have fear, when they have remorse, when they're concerned about their own personal safety or the status of their nation or their neighborhood, well, then the market goes down. Remember that. The stock market is a human barometer, and it all comes back to economics. And again, not the mumbo-jumbo charts and graphs and all the fancy terminology that economists use. It's about the essence of the economics. You see, economics is really just the management of scarcity. It's the science that you apply every day in your life to make decisions. The decision of what kind of house to purchase, the decision of what kind of car to buy. When you make a choice to brown bag it to lunch versus going to a restaurant, or going to a fast food restaurant where it's less expensive versus going down to a sit-down restaurant with tablecloths, that's all about economic decisions. You're managing scarcity, and you literally apply that every second of your life. Whether you should buy another cup of coffee, or whether you should have another child, whether you should live in Texas, or whether you should live in Rhode Island. Every decision you make is about managing your resources and applying the resources that you have to your lifestyle. That's managing scarcity. That's what economics ultimately is. If you break down economics into its root word, you'll recall that econ can be interpreted as the house or the earth. That's why we call the science that studies the earth and the environment ecology, right? Ecology, that's the study of a house or the study of the earth. Well, economics is the management of the house or the management of the earth. Or in terms of scarcity, you can think of it as the management of resources. So there's really two things to think about when it comes to economics. One, as I've already mentioned, it's the management of scarcity. It's the reason you make choices. If you had a magic wand and you could have whatever you wanted, then you wouldn't have to worry about scarcity and you wouldn't have to make choices. You just have everything you want. But you don't. That's a fairy tale. You know as an adult that your resources are limited, and to successfully navigate your way through life, you have to make your lifestyle fit your available resources. That's a key element to building wealth. That's why I tell you there are three steps to building wealth, and you have to do it in that precise order, which is first become an earner. You have to create a means where you're earning income, whether you do it through your own personal employment or whether you work for someone else. That first step to building wealth is to create some type of an income stream. The second step, and this is the most critical and where most people fail, and that's to become a saver. You have to learn to create a surplus and then save it. You can't spend everything you make. And in our society, it's even worse. People spend more than what they make. So you have to be a disciplined saver. You have to cut your consumption. You have to rein in your lifestyle so that you can live on significantly less than the income you produce. And then the third step is to develop investment income. Now that's the part that everybody wants to focus on. And consequently, that's why so many people get ripped off and lose their money, is because every shark and charlatan is out there trying to figure out some way they can swindle you out of your money. Whether it's out-and-out fraud or whether it's just inflated fees that you're paying at your bank or your broker, or for some other type of financial product that you don't need because you're not an investor, because you haven't obeyed these three simple rules I'm telling you, where you first have to develop an income and then save and then become an investor. So that's the simple economics to building wealth, following those three steps, managing the scarcity in your life so that you can build a reserve, so you can have a nest egg, so that you can take that savings and eventually, when it's large enough, when you've reached critical mass, you can apply that capital in such a way, whether you're invested in the stock market or in real estate or your own personal business, so that your money's working for you and you're not working for your money. That third step is the area where most people get tripped up and they just never make it there, and consequently, even if they're high income earners, they can never build wealth. So managing scarcity, that's a key takeaway. That's what you want to think about. That's one of the two most important things you want to think about when you think about economics. And then the second thing you want to think about is incentives. You see, because once you've learned how to manage scarcity, you realize that you do that by increasing incentives. These are the incentives that make your life better, that give you a higher standard of living. That's why you make the choice of what house to buy. You want to buy the biggest, nicest, cleanest, warmest house in the safest neighborhood that's closest to the activities that you do every day, such as going to work or going to play or going to school or whatever you do. But because of scarcity, you're required to limit those decisions. Maybe you have to drive farther to work to afford the size of the house you need. Maybe if you want to be in a particular neighborhood that's safer or has a higher social status, you have to buy a smaller house because you can't afford the square footage in a better neighborhood. You see, by managing scarcity and adjusting your lifestyle, what you're trying to do is create the most amount of incentives which give you the best quality of life. So those are the key takeaways of any understanding of economics. Manage scarcity and seek incentives. Now that seems simple enough, but why doesn't anybody apply them, or if they are applying them, why are they doing such a horrible job? Well, let's think about our society. Much of what we do is under the control of a bureaucracy, whether it's a corporation you work for or a government. In most cases, that bureaucracy is a large corporation, a multinational, or the government. Directly or indirectly, your source of income is affected by these bureaucracies. And the way you live your life is also affected by these bureaucracies, whether it be the rules they impose on you as the government, or whether it be the cartels, or the ways a big business has structured things so that your choices and the way you live your life are constrained. So here's where the problem creeps in. They don't properly manage scarcity and incentives so as to benefit the individual, because they're not individuals. They're big bureaucracies. And even if they have the best of intentions, they can't efficiently manage scarcity, nor can they create the incentives that individuals need. And again, this is even if they have the best of intentions, even if their motives are purely benevolent. In the United States, there's 310 or 320 million people. Do you think the S&P 500 companies, or federal, state, or local government, do you think they can create individual incentives that are individually custom-tailored to 320 million people? They just can't do it. Again, no matter how hard they try, no matter how benevolent they are, they just can't do it. One person may be more concerned with staying home and raising their children. Another person may be more concerned with going on vacations and traveling. A third person, they may be more interested in playing golf. Another individual, they may want to own a big home, or someone else may want to own a big car or a motorcycle or a boat. You can't possibly know what each individual wants. Everybody has their own types of preferences. And that's why incentives have to be tailored by the individual. That's why you as an individual can manage your own resources in a way to take the things that are the most scarce, the things that are the most expensive, and regulate your lifestyle around that to create your best living environment, to create your best standard of living. That way you can experience the most positive incentives and not experience or at least limit the things that cause you pain, the pain points. Those are the disincentives. You want to avoid pain and increase pleasure. That's what managing scarcity does. And that's how incentives work. Now, many people get confused by this principle. They think that when an individual acts in their own self-interest, they're acting selfishly. And that's not true. In fact, that's the farthest thing from the truth. Don't let anybody put a guilt trip on you. When you live your life in such a way to improve your standard of living and to move in a direction that increases your incentives, things that are in your own best self-interest, that's not selfish. That's maximizing and economizing your activities. And that's ultimately what makes the world turn. That's what makes the efficiency and what we call the hidden hand of the market. It's millions and billions of people that are doing things that are in their own best self-interest. And when people are free to choose and also free to suffer the consequences of their choices, that's what regulates society. And I believe the more society encourages the invisible hand of the free market to do its job, the better the quality of life and the standard of living for all its citizens will be. You see, when we live in a society where you think that the government is going to take care of you in old age with Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and things of that nature, then what it causes people in that society to do is to not save for their own future. It causes them to not take care of their own health. It causes them to not see any consequences to living irresponsibly. So when they get old and they don't have any money, or when they get sick and they can't afford medical treatment, or when they can no longer do the things that they feel that they're entitled to be able to do, they blame the government. It's the government's fault. And that's a lack of character. But that's what you end up with by making promises for all types of entitlement programs that the people want, but what in reality actually hurt the people's standard of living and their quality of life. You see, because ultimately, no one in the White House, no one in Washington, D.C., no one in any state capital, none of these people are going to care about your health care, are going to care about how you're taken care of in old age, are going to care about anything the way you would care about it. Who loves your spouse more, you or a politician? Who loves your children more, you or a politician? Who knows what's best for you, you or a bureaucrat somewhere? Now, I'm not saying that the government's evil. I'm not saying that they're not benevolent. I'm not saying that they're not doing things with the best of intentions. What I'm saying is what we've just talked about with economics, because they can't manage scarcity, because they can't adequately create incentives, that's what causes the problem, no matter how good intentions they have. So what can you do about all this? Well, if you want to be a wealthsteader, if you want to take responsibility for building your own wealth and managing your own lifestyle in such a way that you have personal freedom and independence, then you need to start working on understanding principles of economics and applying them in your own life. You need to understand how to manage scarcity. You need to understand that by managing scarcity, it will allow you to make wise choices, choices that will build your own personal character, choices that will result in you having a reserve of money, a nest egg, savings. And then you'll be able to apply your resources to creating more incentives in your life so that you can have a healthier and a happier lifestyle. It all comes down to managing scarcity and increasing incentives. And if you think when I talk about the invisible hand managing the economy, and when I talk about the free market, if you think that's all mumbo jumbo, well, it's not. Let me just draw one simple analogy, and this is an analogy that an economist named Walter Williams uses to describe the efficiency of the marketplace. And this is a variation of what Adam Smith wrote about back in the mid-1700s, back about the time that our country was formed. If you're not familiar with Adam Smith, you should look up The Wealth of Nations. Look for a modern translation of that book. It's fascinating, and if you only ever had to read one book in economics, Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations is the one that you'd want to read. But here's how Walter Williams has taken a modern-day adaptation of Adam Smith's concept of how the invisible hand works in the marketplace and why things work so efficiently. You see, Walter Williams would have you think about the efficiency of how the marketplace works. Consider somebody in New York City. You know, the Big Apple, the city of New York, there's, 10 million people that live there. And within the city proper, they're not growing food, they're not raising cattle, they don't have dairy cows. And yet every day, those millions of people have food on their table. And how does it get there? They're not growing it themselves. Well, it gets there through the economy. It gets there through the free market. So take the farmer that maybe is out in the Midwest, the farmer that's growing corn or growing wheat, growing potatoes or raising pigs or raising beef cattle. Do you think they get up every morning and work long hours, get up and go to work before the sun rises and work hard, sweat in the summer and freeze in the winter working their farms? Do you think they do that because they love the people in New York? Do you think they do that out of benevolence? Do you think they do that because they want to be nice people? No, the farmers in the Midwest, they get up every day and they milk their cows and they herd their cattle and they feed their pigs and they grow their soybeans and their wheat and their corn. They do it all for money. They don't do it out of benevolence for the people in New York. They probably don't even like the people in New York. They do it for one reason. They do it to earn an income. And likewise, the people in New York, do you think they go to their stores or they go to their restaurants and they say, I'm going to buy some pork today or I'm going to eat some bacon today because I want to help out those poor pig farmers in Nebraska? No, you people in New York, they make fun of pig farmers in Nebraska. The people in New York part with their hard-earned money to buy bacon for breakfast because they want to eat the breakfast. That's the incentive that they're looking for. And the pig farmers in Nebraska, they're raising pigs for the incentive of earning cash, of making a living. They could care less about the people in New York. Well, that's a simple way to look at it. And again, if you want more detail, go back and read the excellent work of Adam Smith. The full title is called An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations. But everybody refers to it as The Wealth of Nations. It's the foundation of all modern economics. It's really the go-to manual. If you're not familiar with it, go check it out. But that's Walter Williams' modern-day adaptation of Adam Smith's theory of how the invisible hand works. I think that makes sense. I think you can see that that's how the efficiency of markets work. It's not done out of benevolence. It's not done because a corporation or because a government told you to do it. It's at the individual level. And if you apply these principles to your life and learn how to manage scarcity and how to increase incentives, then you'll find that it'll be much easier to build your own personal wealth. Don't count on someone else. Count on yourself. Look towards your own self and your own family. That's ultimately how you're going to build your net worth and ultimately your personal freedom and independence. Well, I didn't mean to preach to you today. I do get passionate about this subject. I'm going to come back in the next episode, and I want to talk about the three schools of economics. That's the Keynesian School of Economics, the Chicago School of Economics, and the Austrian School of Economics. If you've heard about these three philosophies of economics and you want to understand more about them, then that's what we'll talk about in the next episode. As always, if you have questions or concerns or you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do that through the website, wealthsteading.com. I also am very thankful for all of you that have gone out to iTunes and subscribed to the show. We're building up quite a number of ratings and reviews, and for the people that have gone out there and taken the time to do that, I really thank you. That means a lot to me. And so until the next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.